Well, what can I say? David is really one of the pioneers and guiding lights in the homeopathic community today. Not only is he an excellent practitioner and educator, somebody who's been involved in homeopathy now for about 20 years and has his own school in upstate New York, but he's somebody who I would say almost more than anybody else I know really embodies and holds a vision of the role that homeopathy has in really helping to bring about a healthier place on this planet for all living beings. And I think every time I talk to David, this is more than anything else what I take away from him. He's really looked at what is the relationship between homeopathy and healing, what is homeopathy's role, and not only that, but he's embodied really the core of homeopathy in himself. Whenever I talk to David, I'm always reminded of Herbert Roberts' article at the very beginning of The Art and Cure of Homeopathy, where he asks the question, what does it take to be a homeopath? What is required to be a homeopath? And whenever I think about that question, the answers to that question, I feel that David has completely and fully embodied in himself. Probably more than anything else, the best sense I can give you of David as a practitioner, as a teacher, is a couple of years ago, I sent a very good friend of mine and colleague, Dr. Gregory Pace, who's a naturopathic doctor, to actually do some work with David up at his school. And this involved him actually sitting in on the classes and videotaping the live cases. And Gregory has told me, and this is not somebody who's new to homeopathy, this is somebody who's been practicing now for about 15 years, that experience at his school has had more of a profound and dramatic impact on his ability to practice homeopathy successfully than anything he's done in the last 10 years. And to me, that speaks quantities in terms of really what David has to offer. So let me just give you some quick logistical information. For those of you who are interested in finding out more about David's work, his school, you can contact them at 845-255-6141. That's 845-255-6141. And the offices are open Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays from 9:30 a.m. to 4 p.m. That's Eastern Standard Time. So again, the number is 845-255-6141. And you can reach them Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, 9:30 a.m. to 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. They also have an excellent website. The URL is Classical Homeopathy. Is it classicalhomeopathy.com? Is that correct?
That's correct.
Yes. Okay. So it's www.classicalhomeopathy.com, and that has all kinds of information about David as a practitioner and also the school itself. Also, I did want to mention that the school, because of the work that they're doing in a variety of different areas, did receive some funds for 20 student scholarships through the years 2006 and 2008. And this is really an opportunity. I understand that most of these scholarships are gone, but there still are a few that are remaining. So if you're looking to continue your education in homeopathy, whatever level you're at, you might want to contact them as soon as possible and see if you possibly qualify for this this particular scholarship program that they're offering. I'll ask David more about that later in the call. We can find out more about what are the criteria and so on and so forth. But I think at this point, let me just again thank you for joining us. David, I know you're very busy with all the work that you're doing is in your practice and in your teaching. And again, I want to really thank you for joining us. I know it's greatly appreciated by everybody who has the opportunity to learn and from your insights and experience.
Oh, Kim, you're just too kind. I thank you for all those wonderful words.
And nothing, really. I mean all of it.
I know. I'll take your case later.
Okay. All right. So, David, you had actually suggested the subject of dreams. And, you know, for me, this is a very interesting subject. A lot of people don't know, you know, how do we incorporate dreams, you know, in our practice? Are they useful? To what degree are they useful? Do we interpret them? So there's a lot of interesting questions about this subject. So I'm really glad that you suggested it. I guess before we actually get into discussing the significance of dreams in homeopathic treatment, perhaps I thought you could give us your take on what is the importance of dreaming in general.
The importance of dreaming in general for me is that dreaming is a tool of the subconscious that allows material that's been buried for years, maybe even decades, perhaps even for a whole lifetime, to emerge to the surface of the consciousness to be worked on. Very much on the level of the psyche, it works very much like if one has a splinter and it's buried, the natural function of the organism is to push it to the surface. And dreams serve that very purpose. And working with homeopathic treatment in resolving issues in life through dreams is as part of the therapeutic for me is a very important thing.
David, I know, you know, there's so many different schools out there. You know, there's people who take a Jungian approach to dream analysis. There's people who look at a Freudian approach. And, you know, then there's a lot of the, you know, like the Mayan schools and Southeast Asia, they have some different dream work approaches. I'm curious, is there a particular method or school of thought that you embrace when you're interpreting your dreams of the patients?
There is, and before getting into that a little bit, I'd like to add just a little bit more about the first question about...
Oh, yes, I'm sorry. I thought you were done, David.
No, I sort of was, but it was more about... I wanted to just get a little take about how dreams play a significant role in the homeopathic treatment.
Oh, okay. Please do that. Yeah.
Okay. And what I would like to say is dreams are... and the study of interpretation of dreams is a huge subject, and obviously this forum of 40 or 45 minutes is barely enough to scratch the surface.
Sure.
But the simple answer about the dreaming is the way that the psyche brings out material from the unconscious, and that we have to work on that in a very rational and reasonable way, and it's important for us who work with dreams not to think of us as therapists or psychotherapists or analysts, because we're not. And we're working with homeopathic treatment. And the interesting thing is that Hahnemann, who was a great benefactor to us of homeopathy, nowhere in the Organon is dreams mentioned.
Mm.
So it's interesting to me that Hahnemann, who placed, you know, so much importance on spirit and the relationship of the emotional and mental functioning with the physicality of individuals, makes no mention at all of dreams, of the subconsciousness, consciousness, at all in the entire Organon.
Very interesting.
And while he's keen to talk about the harmonious relationship of the feelings and functioning in paragraph 9, which I'm going to read in a minute because I think it's very important for people to really understand how Hahnemann perceived health. He doesn't have one word about our dreaming state and the significance that it holds for all people and the human spirit, or its place that it should be incorporated into the healing process. Let me just read paragraph 9, and I know I won't bore anybody with it no matter how many times you read it, because it's really... For me, the eloquent statement about a healthy human being. And paragraph 9 says, in the healthy human state, the spirit-like force, autocracy, that enlivens the material organism as dynamis, governs without restriction, and keeps all the parts of the organism in admirable, harmonious, vital operations as regards both feelings and functions, so that our indwelling, rational spirit can freely avail itself of this living, healthy instrument for the higher purposes of our existence. He's not saying anything about taking away pain or pimples or anything like that. He's talking about the absolute freedom of an individual to fulfill their purpose in their lifetime, which is profound at the very least.
It's a totally beautiful passage. I've always loved it. It's just, it really gives you an insight to the depth at which he was working.
It is, and it's interesting to read other editions or other interpretations of the Organon from some of the older masters. This was Wenda O'Reilly's issue that I read from, which is a magnificent translation, but some of the others are even more poetic. But the idea being, we're here to fulfill something about our existence. And in order to do that, we have to have all the parts in vital, harmonious operations as regards sensations or feelings and functions. Dreaming is a function, and yet Hahnemann makes no mention of this. And that's curious. So I'm not persuaded that Hahnemann, who created this new paradigm of healing in Western civilization, and who actually recorded himself dreams in his Materia Medica, but he didn't view this aspect of human functioning as insignificant. So suffice it to say, he also omitted numerous topics of importance in his literal writings. But it's my belief, Kim, and you know we've spoken about this, I strongly believe that the overwhelming majority of the techniques and tools that we need as a healing art practitioner is all there if we only read the deepest truths of what he wrote in his seminal work of The Organon.
Mm.
So currently I'm working on a presentation for my master class, and the working title so far is, picking up on Hollywood a little bit, is The Organon Decoded, reading between the Hahnemannian lines.
So you're going to be the Dan Brown of homeopathy, is that what it is?
Yeah, well, absolutely.
That's great, I love it. I love that title. Well, you know, I couldn't agree with you more about what you're saying. I mean, this is, for me, that's the core of everything. Did you want to continue talking
about more? Just to quickly enunciate, from my point of view, that there are three kinds of dreams.
Okay.
The first, in my experience, is what I basically call, given technology, although I am challenged in technology, but basically downloading, which simply means that due to the enormous amount of impressions that we receive every day, we just need to expel some of this overload of everyday impressions. And in a matter of speaking, it might be likened to a psychological bowel movement from consuming too many large quantities of daily spam.
Mm, okay. That downloading is number one.
Yeah. And in fact, psychologically, you and I and everyone listening in Western civilization receive more impressions every 6 months of our lives as we live today than our great-grandparents did in their entire lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
And as a consequence, the brain has not evolved to the point that it can handle that kind of influence.
Mm.
So the second kind of dreaming is what I would call obstacle or conflict identification. And this is where the thrust of Jung comes in, and that is material coming from deep within the psyche, representing critical issues regarding the patient's life, and as such impacting their overall treatment on physical, emotional, mental, and spiritual levels. And here there's a myriad of issues. And to just list a brief sampling, these would include such areas as self-esteem, conflict resolution, self-confidence, guilt, fears, anxieties, social relationships, purpose of life, unfulfilled love, desires, traumas on all levels, etc., etc. And essentially, these are aspects of a person's character or their perception of reality, behaviors that prevent and obstruct the harmonious unfolding of a person's life, thereby impeding their movement toward fulfilling their higher purposes. And that's why I read paragraph 9. And the last state of dreaming is a name that I have respectfully borrowed from Native American and shamanic healers, which they simply call vision. And this is not an ordinary dream state that derives its origins purely from the individual's own psyche, per se. Rather, it's a state whereby in a healthier person, and I want to emphasize, in a healthier person where there's been resolution on many old issues, there's a collaboration or an integration, if you will, of the psyche and the spirit, which is now unencumbered and moving toward the end of the healing process, and now it can receive direction from a divine source or inspiration as to how to proceed in life. And essentially, it becomes a dreamlike experience that becomes a roadmap toward fulfillment.
Hmm. Very interesting, David.
So I can now move on to your next question. I'm sorry.
Okay, yeah, and at some point I hope that you'll kind of maybe clarify for us what is the value of these different categories of information as it relates to homeopathy.
Sure, I can do that even now if you like.
Okay, yeah, why don't you just do that? I mean, certainly that's something that strikes my interest.
Okay. The value of knowing where these dreams are depends on who we are as the practitioner. And this is an emphasis that I place on in my school, being that the homeopath has to evolve themselves. You know, if we look at paragraph one, the high and only mission of the homeopath is to cure as it is termed. It's assuming that we know what a cure actually means.
Sure.
If someone is irritable and has cancer and you cure the cancer and they're still irritable, from my point of view, you have cured a bunch of symptoms, much to the delight of people in that person's life and for that person themselves, but you have not actually changed qualitatively the living that that person has to experience.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have to go past presenting symptoms, and we need to see, we need to have a more objective view of reality. And that's what I try to do. So we have to remember that homeopathic treatment always hastens the healing process of the individual on all levels faster than just therapy alone. I've seen cases where there's been rapid movement in the healing process physically, which corresponds directly to the progress made on the mental and emotional plane. And I've also witnessed profound movement, as I'm sure you have, on the mental, emotional, and spiritual levels, even before there was any remarkable movement on the physical plane with regard to their chronic symptoms.
Sure.
And in these cases in particular, these people who might even suffer the same or even worse will always agree to continue with treatment even though they're in discomfort, simply because the vital force has informed them that mentally, emotionally, psychologically, and spiritually, the weight and the filth of the dis-ease on all these levels lightens, and as such, they're willing to tolerate a bit more physical discomfort, knowing that the process of healing is already engaged.
Right. Yeah, I've certainly seen that myself, David.
Uh-huh. Yeah, absolutely. And anyone with any experience, I think, initially has a sense of surprise when someone comes in and says, you know, my psoriasis is worse than what before, but now my relationship with my husband is fantastic.
Right.
You know? And it's not what we're looking for, because that's obviously not what their presenting symptoms are.
Sure, sure. Great. So, David, getting to that second question, I'll just repeat it again. I had asked you about what method or school of thought you specifically embrace, because there are so many different approaches to dream analysis.
Right.
Is there a particular approach that you use or a method that you embrace particularly?
Yeah, for my purposes, what's worked for me for the last 20 years in practice is a combination of shamanic and Jungian dream interpretation.
Mm-hmm.
And at some level, the shamanic interpretation of dreams is not so different from Jung's dream interpretation. Essentially, from some shamanic traditions, we are everything in our dreams.
Mm-hmm.
That is to say, we are, of course, ourselves in our dreams. And this represents generally who we are now in our lives. But we're also, generally speaking, all the other characters, the events, the environments, circumstances, and even objects in our dreams.
Mm.
In both the shamanic and Jungian dream interpretation, dreams mostly represent the emergence of the subconscious percolating to the level of the conscious level.
Mm.
And so in this regard, I actually would like to read just a very brief passage from Jung's autobiography, Memories, Dreams, and Reflections.
Oh, yeah, I read that years ago. That's a great book.
Which was printed after his death. And this particular quote refers to the second dream state as the conflict identification, or in Jung's terms, the shadow.
Mm.
But in any case, I believe it's a significant quote regarding dreaming, especially during homeopathic treatment. And he says, "We are remembering a potentiality of life which has been overgrown by civilization, but which in certain places is still existent. If we were to relive it naively, it would constitute a relapse into barbarism. Therefore, we prefer to forget it. But should it appear to us again in the form of a conflict, that is, in a dream, then we should keep it in our consciousness and test the two possibilities against each other, the life we live and the one we have forgotten. For what has apparently been lost does not come to the fore again without sufficient reason. That reason, I would say parenthetically, is the homeopathic treatment and the fact that the patient is getting better." And he goes on to say, "In the living psychic structure, nothing takes place merely mechanical fashion. Everything fits into the economy of the whole, relates to the whole. That is to say, it is all purposeful and has meaning. But because consciousness never has a view of the whole, it usually cannot understand this meaning." And that's a very significant quote, because consciousness cannot understand the whole. And what Jung is essentially saying is consciousness, on an ordinary level, cannot be objective. That's where we come in, and that's where therapists come in be able to see and have more objectivity and clarity about a person's life than they have about themselves.
Very interesting. I like that quote. That's an excellent quote.
I feel it's our responsibility as healers to provide the correct stimulation to the vital force to be able to give it enough dynamic strength to push through years and decades worth of the suppressed psychological material, which has really rendered us into a state of disease. And once that's done, light and clarity can be shown upon that material, and it'll allow for resolution to the tormented and the conflicted life. So to answer the question still a little further, what seems to me efficacious in my practice is a combination of shamanic and Jungian psychology, but I feel very strongly there is not a monopoly on dream interpretation. I do believe, however, and this is most important, that whatever the interpretation, it must always, without exception, correspond to the patient's experience of their life. And so it's incumbent upon us to become more aware of who our patients are, what lifestyle they lead, what cultural background they come from. I have an interest in Eastern traditions. I've studied quite a bit about mythology with Joseph Campbell, not with him personally, but books and tapes and so forth. And there is a global view of dreaming to some degree, but there's a commonality amongst all cultures in the world, being that we're all human beings on the planet.
Very interesting, David. Let me ask you, because I'm sure people in terms of practicalities are curious how you actually work with the dreams of your patients. So do you actually interpret the dreams, or do you just kind of acknowledge them and incorporate them into your repertorization? Because obviously there are rubrics for various types of dreams. So what exactly do you do when a patient comes in and they tell you about a particular dream?
Well, again, Kim, this is a very important place for us as practitioners. We have to see it in the context of where the patient is in their life. And you know, if someone, some years ago I had a dream, I had to go to the shoe store, I was taking my daughter to the circus, and I had to get my car fixed. So that night I dreamt about a pink elephant in red Keds, sitting in the back seat, and so that's just downloading. So we
right.
see where and what the relationship the patient has with the dream and where they are in their lives. We as homeopaths, and I'm sad to say that all too frequently, because we don't have a deeper understanding of the healing process, and I'm not just speaking about Hahnemann, but the healing process in general, we've sort of learned to jump on rubrics and to say, ah, there's a rubric, let's use it. And dreams are there, and they have significance, but we need to see it in the relationship of the patient and not just say, you know, did you dream? Yes, I had a dream about a snake or about being lost in a forest. And you look under, you know, in the rubric and the repertory, and you find your particular remedies for that rubric in that dream state. And then some people actually try to fit the rest of the case to the dream state. And from my point of view, that's not clear, concise seeing, nor is it good application of homeopathic treatment.
So, David, would I be correct in saying, and you can let me know, but would I be correct in saying that if the information is just kind of download information that's not specifically relevant to conflicts the individual is having, that that information might be less useful in terms of finding the remedy than perhaps information that's associated with deep emotional or other types of conflicts the person's dealing with?
I'm sorry, could you repeat that again? My phone went a little...
Yeah, my question was, you had broken down dreams into three general categories.
Yes.
And the first one was just general downloading of information that wasn't particularly tied to any specific issues in the patient.
Right.
And then the second category were basically associated with information that had to do with deeper internal conflicts or unresolved emotional issues that the patient might have. And my question is, would the latter information, that information associated with the deeper conflicts of the patient, would that be more, generally speaking, more relevant to finding the best remedy choice in a case?
From my experience, yes, it is.
Okay.
Yeah, there's a time to pick up on dreams and to start to utilize them in the benefit of the homeopathic treatment.
Right.
We have to remember that all the centers do not move in the same tempo. It's something that most people are not aware of, but we can think from our own experiences, if we just think about the relationship of the physical, mental, and emotional state of the organism in a very simple daily experience. Let's say somebody cuts us off when we drive. What would be the first response of the organism?
Well, maybe anger or something like that.
Well, actually, the first response of the organism is the release of adrenaline.
Oh, okay. Okay.
You get that feeling in the pit of your stomach.
Sure, sure.
And then you take maneuvers to avoid an accident.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have an emotion after that, and then later on you find that you have a few choice words for the driver.
Right.
If you break down the physical, which is the release of adrenaline and the maneuvers to get out of the way, and then the time it takes from that to happen to the time that you feel anger, and the time that it takes for anger then to go into the brain and formulate certain choice words, which are usually expletive deleted,
right.
You'll find that the ratio is 30,000 to 1, and that the body works 30,000 times faster than the emotions, and the emotions work 30,000 times faster than the brain.
Mm-hmm.
How does that extend in terms of homeopathic treatment? What if someone has a dream and yet they're suffering from asthma? Is it the time, because they have the dream, to think that the asthma, which could be a life-threatening or serious condition, that time, the dream, is the time when the remedies for the dream should be associated with the asthma? There, we need to be cautious about all things, not just dreams, of course, but all
sure.
things. So it needs to be taken into the context of where the person is at the moment. And
basically what you're saying here, David, is that the symptoms, really every symptom, not just dream symptoms, but every symptom, always has to be looked in the context of the rest of the case.
That's correct.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, and I totally see that. Did you want to add anything else to that?
No, that's
okay. So, David, what I was curious about is, you know, people have these dreams and they have different types of images that come up. You
mm-hmm.
know, what is your understanding of what these images actually mean in the dreams? How do you look at them?
Well, that's a very good question. The images and dreams for me are only significant to what the images is relevant to the patient.
Mm.
You know, tuberculinums have fear of dogs.
Mm-hmm.
So if you were to say, if a patient says, you know, I had a dream about dogs, and the homeopath says, aha, you know, they must have been fearful. On the other hand, carcinosin loves animals and loves dogs.
Mm.
What, you know, so you can't, it can't just be the image, it's the relationship of the patient to the image. Don't forget, we hold on to images based upon what is relevant to our psyche and our perception of reality at the time we are experiencing it.
Mm. So, you know, when you said that, it made me think of the remedy Azusa, you know, which has a tremendous love of animals, and then they have these dreams. They dream of, you know, cats and dogs and rats and all kinds of different animals.
Mm-hmm.
And in the case of Azusa, it's actually a positive dream where they're trying to connect with these animals. But if you know, if you didn't know any better, you might just say, oh, dreams of dogs must have been bad and fearful. So you can see that in the context of that particular remedy that the information can have a very different type of meaning. So I can see that why this is really important.
Yeah, it's always going to be that we need to always place the patient with all the symptoms, including the dreams, into the context of their overall unfolding to the highest degree of health that they can attain. Our objectivity and our awareness of their unfolding will determine the importance of the dreams as well as any other symptoms.
Mm. Makes sense.
We need to know what cure is for each patient,
mm.
not generically, but we need to know what each patient is capable of.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in the repertory, there's a rubric for Down syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
I have never heard in my life of a child who was born with Down syndrome being cured of Down syndrome.
Sure.
Have you ever heard of that?
No, not cure. I mean, I've heard of, and actually I've even had a case where there was improvement in immune function, things like that, but obviously not, no cure.
No cure.
Yeah.
Because that's genetically encoded.
Right.
And, but relative to where the child who had the trisomy 21, relative to where they were, they moved to the highest level possible for themselves.
Sure.
And that's what we have to take into account.
Sure.
Someone who has potential toward the fulfillment of their whole existence is not cured if you cure their cancer and they're still miserable.
Right, right.
Someone who only wants to live a physical life and stay alive and you cure the very same cancer, then that's a cured case.
Yeah, that makes sense, David.
So we need to take it into the context of who we are sitting in front of.
Mm.
And that, for me, that's the most important issue. If someone has no potentiality, well, then let me get rid of, give them remedies to eliminate their physical suffering.
Sure, sure.
But how many times have you had the experience, Kim, of eliminating some presenting symptoms, and the patient comes back, and you look at your chart, and all the symptoms are gone, and they say, I don't know, there's something still not right.
Yep, yep.
And you go, well, you know, all your symptoms that you came in are gone. I know, but now I have this thing.
Right.
You know, it's the thing that gets our attention at the time. As someone gets healthier, excuse me, you have to remember that their perception of reality becomes enhanced.
Sure.
And that then engages their spiritual life.
Sure.
That's the time when people really begin to dream.
Mm.
When the struggle for their inner fulfillment, when the struggle for the elimination of the obstacles that stand in the way of their reason for being become clear to them, that's when people start to dream. And that's when the dream seemed to me to count the most.
Very interesting.
David, let me ask you, you've been talking about individualizing the homeopathic treatment based on, not just even the symptoms of the dream, but how they relate to the other symptoms of the case. I'm curious, do you find that there is an aspect of dreams which have more of a universal quality? I know that Jung talks about, archetypal collective unconscious, and if there is this type of information, how do you use it, if you do use it?
Well, I think there is, in some instances, not only according to Jung, but in mythology, there is a universality. Various things in nature are universal to people. Water represents something positive, except in cases of tsunami. But generally, water represents something positive, movement, transformation, knowledge, and so forth. That's part of our human experience. But I always have to ask the patient, not what I think a universality is, but what does this image mean to you? What relationship do you have with it? How important does it? Where does it fit into the larger context of your life? I'm always asking questions of what are the images in this dream? How do they impact on your life, and what relevance do they have to your life? And so while I agree there is universality, I'm reluctant to apply them across the board with a broad brush.
Are there times when you just find some type of universality, though, that does seem to exist, or...?
Frequently, I do, but I don't want to be prejudiced.
I see.
There are a number of times in the Organon and in my own feelings about life that I'm better off in seeing more clearly and objectively about the world when I remove my prejudices. And so, if you have Freud with an interpretation of dreams, you have Jung, you have Adler, you have shamanism, you have Taoism, you have Egyptian dream interpretation. I mean, there can be universality, but it also depends on a cultural thing. In the United States, they have... I don't watch very much television, but they have this thing called Fear Factor or Survivor or something like that.
I don't have television, but I know what you're talking about.
You have to eat those disgusting bugs and stuff. But in Indonesia, it's a delicacy. They actually have to purchase them.
Right.
So if someone is from Indonesia and they're dreaming about bugs, well, then maybe they're thinking, wow, I'm going to have a real treat here. But if you have someone from, Harlem dreaming about bugs, well, that might be a different story.
That's an interesting point.
our ability to be in contact with the person in front of us is, for me, the most paramount and important aspect of case-taking. If I can't see the person for who they are without prejudice, I will never find the right remedy. And therefore, I won't fulfill my high and only mission.
Sure. Well, that's absolutely the case, isn't it?
It is.
So, David, let me ask you. I mean, because I'll be honest, I when I'm taking a case, I'll frequently even forget to ask about their dreams. And I've just got into the habit, it's probably not a good habit, of just taking a whole case and not really using dream information that much unless the patient really volunteers that they have these repeated dreams or whatever. And yet today I see among a lot of the contemporary practitioners, not just the use of dreams, but even an emphasis on the importance of dreams. You see this especially in Provings, but you even see it in a lot of the seminars that are being offered out there. So I'm curious, from your perspective, do you find that dreams should be treated more seriously under certain circumstances, under certain conditions? Do you always consider dreams in trying to find the best remedy? And what role do they play in the management of the case?
question. Well, for myself, what I find most relevant in the initial case taking, let's look at it like that, is to see whether a person has had repetitive dreams or recurrent dreams, just as a point of reference. Just to see, you know, if the subconscious is emerging and someone has had, you know, dreams about butterflies, you know, for 5 years in their life. Then it becomes significant. If a kid sees a scary movie and has a nightmare, well, you know, for me, that's the downloading. Now, if it terrifies them and it becomes part of the pathology, then it becomes significant. See, the frequency of dreams, the relation of dreams to an individual's life, all has to be taken into context with their life. But I find during the case that when a patient begins to emerge and become healthier, physically, mentally, and emotionally, they frequently, and I'm certain that you and other practitioners who are listening have had this experience numerous times, it'll be something like, oh, I never thought of it that way before.
Yeah.
Or, I can't believe they said that, but I didn't have to feed into their negativity.
Right.
And ordinarily I would do that, but now I'm doing something else that I never did before.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I would call the emergence from the chrysalis.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're a caterpillar, they go into a state of darkness, and they emerge from the chrysalis as the butterfly. But the interesting thing that most people don't know about the chrysalis is that, or the cocoon, is what happens in there. I mean, the caterpillar goes in there and creates the cocoon, and does it saw off, you know, a couple hundred legs and pull out its fur, and then, you know, when that process is finished, does it screw on some antennas and staple on wings and become a butterfly? And really what happens is the caterpillar melts down into a gelatinous mass and is literally transformed into a new being, but with the same essence. And the metaphor of the butterfly is very much what we do as healers. They have to melt down into a gelatinous mass without destroying anything, because that material can be recycled and then metamorphized into a higher level of being. And so when people begin to emerge from their state and say, oh, I never thought of it this way, or oh, I never saw it that way, or I'm doing things differently, or I don't take things so personally, that's when they, not coincidentally, start to have lots of dreams.
Very interesting.
Those dreams then give me the information that I need to see where they are in their unfolding and what the obstacles are.
Very interesting. And David, as you see the patients unfold, you know, with good homeopathic treatment, do the dreams change? And if so, in what way?
They do. They fold in terms of getting rid of deeper issues that have affected them during their life, and maybe in a way it's sort of like peeling the onion of one trauma being suppressed and then that coming to the surface, and maybe it has to do first with how they feel about work. Maybe they didn't like school and so they hate the job that they have and so on and so forth. Now the job's not so bad, and then the next layer of dreams may unfold relationship, and they had a poor relationship with their parents and therefore their relationships with their spouses are difficult. But now they're having a different view of their spouses and so on and so forth. So as they move on to different levels of conflict resolution, the most important thing is to allow the patient to reveal to their awareness through the dreams who they are about themselves. Allow them to see as a reflection, so that my job essentially is I become a mirror. And I just reflect back to them and say, did you hear that, what you just said? Or don't you find it curious that this was a perception that you have now, but in my notes 6 months ago you said something else, and so on and so forth. And they go, yeah. You know, we have, I think The order is, every day we lose and regain 50 million skin cells.
Mm.
But we're not in contact with that.
Right.
And we're not in contact with the subtle psychological issues that afflict our lives.
Mm-hmm.
So we need to be a good mirror, and we also need to find remedies as material comes up. Remedy pictures begin to emerge as well.
Mm.
So I use, from time to time, dreams in my repertorization. But like yourself, I have found that they're sometimes unreliable.
Mm.
I have found that there is too much emphasis placed on them. I have found that homeopaths sometimes jump on a bandwagon and say, wow, let's go do this way because this is something that's easier.
Mm-hmm.
And I like to use dreams essentially as a gauge for the unfolding of a case.
Mm.
And sometimes, you know, if new remedy picture is a Lachesis and they dream about snakes, well then I might give Lachesis, but it would be more confirmatory rather than, oh, I'm going to use the dream as the rubric that I could hang my hat on and try to base my case based on their dream state.
Very interesting.
And the reason for that, again, is because the tempo of movement of healing through the organism is at various times.
Mm.
It's sort of like I see healing pretty much like the old slinkies, you know, the dog slinkies, the head goes down first and the tail follows later.
Right. Yeah.
If you give a remedy for the tail, the head's just going to crash.
Right.
Or it's not going to work at all.
Right.
We need to follow the movement.
Mm. Very interesting. David, I can see that we're running short on time, but I did want to just ask you one last question and try to still give people an opportunity to ask some of their own questions. But I was curious, do you have any examples or illustrations of dreams with specific cases that you could share with us that might clarify some of the material that you've presented this evening?
I actually do, because I thought you were going to trick me on that. So, there was a case I had about a year ago of a patient who actually lives closer to you than she does to me.
Mm-hmm.
But she had conjunctivitis. She had many other symptoms. Those symptoms cleared up. And she's a yoga instructor.
Mm-hmm.
And she had conjunctivitis, and it hadn't been going around the area. Her kids didn't have it. And she had a dream, and she felt that she was a prisoner in the dream. And that's really all she could remember, but she felt really constricted. And as a result, she felt a band around her heart.
Mm.
And she developed severe conjunctivitis.
Mm.
And just to give a timeline, that was, let's say, May of last year.
Mm-hmm.
On the May 1st, on the 27th, the conjunctivitis was gone, and what came from that first dream, even though it was very sketchy, said, I felt like a prisoner. And as I said, the conjunctivitis was healed, and I'm not going to talk about remedies, because I feel that's a tremendous, it's an erroneous way of doing homeopathy. People say, well, what remedy did you give?
Right.
And I'm not going to give the case because there's no time, but it never helps it with any other patient.
Mm.
No, so it won't help in this case. But then 2 weeks later, she had another dream. And in the dream, she was in a hot tub, and she birthed one of her children in a hot tub. And she was hearing the noises of life, and then she was raised up from the hot tub and started flying, and then she was being sucked up into the universe, and there was a huge white dove, and there was a very long moment where she was falling, but it was more like she was being lowered rather than a free fall. And she fell into her bed, and she looked up at the ceiling, and the ceiling became this great sculpture. And after discussing this dream with her for a while, she came to the understanding that the first dream she was a prisoner, And the second dream, she was realizing her potential. She was moving away from her bed, and then she was going back down to her bed.
Hmm. Very interesting.
And then 3 weeks, and the hot tub was a birthing place for her. So she was actually giving birth to something in herself.
Hmm. Very interesting.
That's her relationship. Now, somebody else said, you know, hot tub, that's really a good time.
Right.
But for her, it was a place of nurturing and giving birth. Her dream happened again about another 3 weeks later, and again she was in a hot tub, and there was a bear chasing her.
Mm.
And she had her child, her young child, with her. And there was a friend of hers in the room, and she gave her child to this very good friend who happened to be a male. But the male represented some quality to her. I said, well, who is he? Well, he's a friend. Well, what is the what kind of friend? A very good friend. Who does he represent to you? She said, he really represents a state of equanimity.
Hmm.
So she gave her child, herself, to a state of someone that was trusted, where she could feel a state of equanimity.
Hmm.
And she told her child that she loved her always, and she let the child go without any fear, and the bear took a bite out of her side. And for her, it was not a horrible experience.
Mm.
It was feeding something that was hungry, but she didn't suffer from that consequence.
Mm.
And she felt bewildered as to why she wasn't frightened.
Mm.
And she woke up, and she had a very somber and at the same time joyful experience. And what she said after we discussed this for a period of time was that, I now feel, she didn't say I now think, she said, I now feel that I can surrender and I can embrace my essence, and I'm ready to sacrifice my old self for a state of equanimity and fulfill my purpose.
Lovely example, which really illustrates a lot of the points that you made tonight. Very nice.
So these three dreams from prisoner, or I should say, at the end of this third dream, the sensation of a band around her chest went away.
Mm.
And it's been gone for over a year now.
Fantastic.
Never returned.
Fantastic. Very interesting. Well, that was a wonderful way to end the formal part of the interview. David, I did want to let everybody know again about your school. And also, I just thought maybe briefly you could, I know you're working on another project. You're trying to, and this is very exciting, you're trying to basically create the first homeopathic hospital in North America, probably in over 100 years. Probably many of you on the call know that we used to have quite a number of homeopathic hospitals all over North America. You know, you go to Philadelphia, there's the Hahnemann Hospital, and Worcester, and Boston. There were many of them. But David has the vision, as I mentioned earlier. David, somebody who has a very large vision, and really is looking at how homeopathy can help to heal the whole planet. And one of his objectives, one of his goals, is to actually help create a homeopathic hospital, and I think it's a very exciting project. David, could you just share a little bit about that with everybody before I open up the lines for questions?
Yes, and thanks for introducing that. This hospital is not your typical hospital. It's a hospital that's taking over a small medical practice in Woodstock, New York, and being part of the Woodstock generation, it seems only appropriate and fortuitous that the facility opened there. But the feeling is we can use integrative medicine, work with allopathically trained doctors who have a feeling for holistic medicine and maybe particularly homeopathy, but not necessarily. And it's equally staffed between allopathically trained medical doctors and nurses and homeopaths, some of which can or cannot be licensed, but the medical doctors and the nurses will be licensed. The idea is to have a small 12 to 15 bed hospital, 10 to 15 bed hospital that will take cases that require regular supervision, but without the necessity for allopathic treatment when homeopathic treatment is more efficacious. It's also a day clinic, so people can come in and out and work with the homeopaths and the doctors throughout the day. The feeling is we don't need to reinvent the wheel by creating huge hospitals with a lot of overhead and expenses for MRIs and CAT scans and so forth. Those facilities already exist, and if necessary, we can refer out to those facilities, but the patients will receive homeopathic treatment under the auspices and the aegis of allopathically trained doctors so that we can give the best of both therapeutics and hopefully have the insurance companies pay for it.
Fantastic. Well, that is just unbelievably exciting. And, David, I just want to let you know now, whatever I can do to support this very important project of yours, just let me know anything I can do. David, I'm going to open up the lines and let some other people ask some questions. Before I do that, though, let me remind people, if you'd like to find out more about David's work, either as a practitioner or about his school, the Hudson Valley School of Classical Homeopathy, you can call 845-255-6141. That's 845-255-6141. Their offices are open for questions Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, 9:30 a.m. to 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. They also have a very nice website with some interesting articles and information, and that website is www.classicalhomeopathy.com. All right, I'm going to open up the lines. We don't have too much time, but perhaps David can answer a couple of questions for people. Hold on 1 second. Everybody, can people hear me?
Yep.
Great. So anybody have any questions for David Kramer? Any questions about dreams or how to use them in your homeopathic practice or anything?
Well,
I'm a real expert here.
I have a comment that has a question embedded in it.
Okay, go ahead.
This is Chris Souten in Toronto. It's about teaching homeopathic students how to use dreams more effectively. Because I teach in the third year program at the Canadian College of Naturopathic Medicine, and we have about 100 to 110 people in each class. And I take live cases in front of the class, and very often dream material will come up in that. And I find that the students are invariably absolutely fascinated by the dream material, but they also, at the same time, they're quite bewildered as to how to go about using it. And then when they get into their own clinical year, similarly, many of them will come to me and say, wow, I just had somebody tell me this incredible dream. And the patient knows the dream is very important, and the practitioner does, but they don't quite know how to take the first steps into making use of it. So,
Chris, before David answers, is there a particular approach that you use?
Well, I'm quite similar to him. I have a Jungian background and also a Gestalt therapy background. So the element of, you know, having a person play each part in the dream is also something I do in my practice that comes originally from Gestalt therapy. But the question would be about, you know, what techniques have you used in your teaching to help students get some kind of grounding in being able to start working with the dream to give them the confidence that they need to wade into it?
David, you got the question?
Yeah, I do, and it's a great question, Chris. I guess the best answer I could give, standing on one leg, as it were, is to have your students really observe where the patient is in their treatment, in their unfolding. You know, the dream is only relevant as to where the patient is psychologically vital in the moment. So there has to be a point of relevance, and it needs to be taken, from my point of view, in the context of where they are now compared to where they have been in terms of the obstacles in their life, and what direction they have in their deepest part feel that they're moving toward. And if you have those 3 points, where they are now, where they've come from in terms of their family history, their physical, mental, emotional traumas, and also the aim that they've had in their life, what I find very often is that people will begin to remember two things. One, and it happens before the age of 7 generally, between 5 and 7, what they really wanted to be in their life. Not what you want to do when you grow up, but who they really want to be. And the second is if they've taken a vow. And the vow, which I didn't get into this evening because it's a topic of another order, the vow is when a child, generally a child, closes down because the psychological trauma or the impression is too much for them to digest in any healthy psychological way, and they say, I'll never do this again, or I'll always do it this way, and so on and so forth. And that material is generally the beginning of psychological suppression and then ends up showing up in the dream state. So if you triangulate from where they came from to where they are now to where they had hoped to be in a genuine sense, not in a cultural sense, but just by themselves, where they hoped to be in their lives, you might get a better handle on the direction and where they are in the context of the dream as it exists for them at this point when you're taking the case.
Great.
Does that help you at all?
Great.
Chris, did you get the answer?
I did. Thank you.
Okay,
very helpful.
So we really only have time for maybe one more question. Is there somebody who's got a really interesting question they'd like to ask David before we end the call? Here's your opportunity. Don't be shy.
Well, I was wondering if David might be willing to repeat that quote from Jung that he read earlier in the call.
Well, I won't because there's no time, but it's on page 246 in his book, Memories, Dreams, and Reflection.
Memories, Dreams. Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
It's actually a very nice book, and just so you know, it's a book that generally you can find it used bookstores fairly easily. It was probably one of his most widely printed and published books. So, and it's a wonderful, there's some really interesting passages in that book that are well worth reading. So even if you're not particularly interested in dreams, it's a nice book.
Thanks.
David, anything else you'd like to, any parting words before we end the call?
Well, just to thank you to the audience, and a great thank you to you, Kim, for all the wonderful pioneering work that you're doing, and to Whole Health Now. I have to say that using your good offices and radar has been remarkably helpful for me in my teaching. And has brought me to other areas of my understanding of repertory, materia medica, and organon that I didn't give computers credit for, but certainly it has.
Well, thank you, David. You know, we're all doing our part to help bring the planet to a greater state of health. And obviously this is, with all the difficulties in the world today, I mean, this is something that we all should be looking towards. Homeopathy has such a large role to play. So let's give us all a big round of applause for our involvement in homeopathy. And David, again, I want to thank you. I know you're very busy, and it's always really a joy and a pleasure and a wonderful learning experience to have you on these calls. So just a big thank you. And can everybody give David a big thank you?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. It's always a pleasure, Kim, and thank you all for being committed. You know.
All right. Talk to you soon, David.
All right. Goodbye, all. And pleasant dreams.
Thanks. Yeah,
you too.
Bye.